Hey guys, I just want to start off by saying thank you for listening to the podcast. But I can't stress enough how important it is for me to continue on producing content, for you to go on and leave us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. Your questions and comments help me keep this thing going, and it's really important for the podcast. The more reviews we get and the higher up in the ranking I go, the more people I could reach. It's really important for you to do so. If you really like the podcast, we'd like to hear from you, and we would really, really appreciate the feedback and reviews. Also want to take a little bit of time here real quick to thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for their continued support of the podcast. And if you want to up your shooting game, go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. You can use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and purchase bags for 20% off. So check them out. This, honestly, it's a game changer, and you won't be disappointed. So phoenixshootingbags.com. Let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we are going to talk elk, one of my favorite topics, one of my favorite things to hunt. We got Michael Batiste from the Elk Calling Academy on with us, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit. What's going on, Mike?
Oh, hey, glad to be here. Thank you for reaching out and inviting me to be a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So give us a little rundown about yourself and how you got involved in all this and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so my name is Michael Batiste. I live in Boise, Idaho. I am the founder of Elk Calling Academy, which, you know, the Elk Calling Academy is basically designed to help individuals kind of shorten that learning curve. You know, this is going to be my 31st year of chasing elk with a bow. And I remember what it was like when, you know, I started. And heck, when I started, there wasn't even the Primos VHS, the Truth series wasn't even out yet. So we had no resources. And my youngest son had came to me and said, "Hey, Dad, I want to take swimming lessons." I was like, "Oh, okay. Not a problem. I'll find you a teacher." And then all of a sudden this light bulb went off above the head. Well, wait a minute. You know, we can take dance lessons and guitar lessons and drum lessons and piano lessons and swimming lessons. Why not offer elk calling lessons and elk hunting lessons? And I've been fortunate. I've been involved in the hunting industry for God, over 15 years now. I spent 10 of those years as a pro staff team member and pro staff director for Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls, which back then was called Bugling Bull Game Calls. And so I've been involved in the call industry and have been working with companies for, you know, kind of behind the scenes read development and testing. And so, like I said, that light bulb went off one day and just decided, you know, heck, why not? And I kind of threw some feelers out on some forums and said, "Hey, what do you guys think about, you know, this?" And the feedback at first was like, "That's one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. You know, you can go to YouTube or you can do this." And I said, "Yeah, but YouTube's not going to tell you move that reed back in the roof of your mouth a little bit or slide your tongue forward a little bit or do these different things to really maximize, you know, your sound quality, but then also talk about all the different sounds and their meaning and, you know, how to do them out in the field and hunt strategies." And it's really, really evolved because now it's got into gear testing and I mean, just pretty much all aspects of elk hunting we now cover for our followers and our patrons.
Awesome. Well, real quick, where do our listeners go to get involved with this? I know you have the YouTube channel. And I think you have your website as well.
So the website's not up and running right now. So basically right now it's, you know, your typical social media, your Facebook, your Instagram, your YouTube, but we also have a Patreon page, which if anybody just goes to elkcallingacademy.com, they can become a monthly patron. And there's three different there's three different tiers. There's Spike, Raghorn, and Herd Bull. Maybe I'm playing on the male ego there a little bit, because funny thing is, all we have is herd bulls that support that Patreon page. But there's benefits. So every couple of weeks, I drop a tutorial video in there for the herd bulls and the raghorns. And it's basically the same stuff that I'm teaching in these one-on-one lessons with people. But then also on Thursday nights, we have a Patreon members only Q&A session.
Okay.
So, because every Wednesday on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, I do a Wapiti Wednesday Q&A. But there's information that I don't really dive into because of those students that are paying for the lessons and are paying for the Patreon page. And so we are currently also right now recording the full-blown e-series, the e-course that will be available on the website here, hoping within the next 30 days if Mother Nature will hurry up and get snow out of the way.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, honestly, well, for one, I go to YouTube for a lot of stuff to learn. So I think that's kind of the norm nowadays. I think that's a really good platform and a really good way to deliver the information.
Oh, yeah.
And I've watched quite a few of your videos, and that's why I have you on. I think you do a really good job with it.
Thank you.
You're easy to listen to. So,
well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. So there's a lot of guys out there that know what they're talking about, but you just want to freaking like
fingernails on the chalkboard.
Yeah. You know, it's. You got to be, you got to know what you're talking about. You also got to be entertaining, and you also have to have a good delivery. You know, there's a lot more to it than just being a, what's the word I'm looking for? A pillar in the,
right.
In the niche, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah, I get that all the time. Like if it's the one thing that I feel that on the podcast we do good, you know, that we do well, is that, and I know this because of the feedback that we've been getting. It's when people listen to my podcast, they feel like it's two guys bullshitting. Like
right.
Friends bullshitting on the phone, you know?
Yeah.
About whatever topic it is. And if you can learn from something like that, I feel like it's better, just a better environment. I mean, I don't claim to be, an expert in anything. I'm definitely not the best host out there, but I do like that the feedback that we get is that. I have a lot of things we need to clean up on. It's a lot of stuff that I'd like to do. But anyway, what I'm getting at is I feel like you got all three parts, and that's important to me. So
appreciate that. Well, and you know, part of it I think is, you know, those 10 plus years that I spent, you know, with Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls. I mean, I was Rocky's right-hand guy. So, I mean, we were traveling and spending time in the booth at sports shows and traveling and doing seminars all over the Northwest and up into Canada. So, you know, there's that development process of learning how to, you know, talk with people. It's not talking to people, it's talking with people to, you know, deliver that information in a way that they're going to get benefits out of it, and they're going to understand, you know, what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important. So I get a lot of questions thrown at me. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I compile these questions.
Sure.
And I bring on people that I feel are best suited to answer them. Now, I had sent you over a couple questions, and I don't know how, but I mixed the questions. I sent you, I mean, they were elk questions.
That's okay.
I sent you questions that I wasn't going to send you. So I'm actually going to hit you blindsided with the questions that I was going to ask you.
Perfect.
So this is completely from the hip, all right?
Good. Put me on the spot. I like it.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about elk communication.
Uh-huh.
This is a pretty easy question, I think. But what are the four most important elk sounds a guy should master and explain them to me.
Sure. So first off, right off the get-go, one thing that, you know, I see a lot of new callers making the mistake of is they don't understand the difference between a location bugle and a challenge bugle. There's not a lot of differences in maybe pitch or how high it goes, but it's how you get from the start of the bugle to there, where a location bugle is nice and relaxed, you know, from the bottom note up to that high note, it holds that high note, and then it just kind of, you know, tapers off into an easy finish. Where that challenge bugle, you know, goes from the first floor of the house right up to the attic really, really quickly. And, you know, I hear from, and this has been something from a lot of students that they're like, yeah, I've gone around and I've done this and I just never gotten a response. And why? And I said, well, give me an example of your location bugle. And 99.99% of the time, they're running around just screaming challenge bugles. So, and I tell them, I said, so basically what you're doing is imagine you're going to a gathering or a party with a bunch of people. And imagine you walk in the room nice and calmly and you just say hi and you know, you're wandering around saying hi nicely versus if you just walk in the room and scream off the top of your lungs, F off. How are you going to be received by the group? Well, that's basically what's going on while they're trying to move around and locating. You know, they're sitting here screaming these challenge bugles and the elk in the area maybe aren't in that challenge mindset, maybe aren't in that. And so, you know, they're looking at the sound going, what's that dude's problem? You know, what's he so mad about? And especially if it's a bull that has used a ton of energy to gather up cows, if he already thinks that you're mad looking for a fight and he's not in that mindset, why on earth would he want to respond to you and let you know where he's at, especially if he has cows? So
I actually have a problem with location bugle myself. I have a hard time taking out the growl.
And the growl's not a problem. I mean, basically within the construct of a bugle, you have the growl, the bugle, and then, you know, the finish with chuckles. I have never seen anything written anywhere, and I've never had an elk run up to me and say, Michael, these are the three necessary parts that if it doesn't contain all these parts, it's not a real bugle. I mean, if you really listen to vocalizations, it could just be the bugle only. It could be the grunt only. It could be the grunt and bugle. It could be the grunt and chuckle. I mean, there's just so many components to it. So growling at the beginning is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's how you growl. Are you just doing a relaxed growl? And I kind of call it that old man growl where, you know, an old man going, huh, huh, where you're doing that instead of a, you know, a deep, heavy growl. So that's one of those things that it's crazy that I find fascinating about elk vocalizations and communication is you can take the basic structure of a sound and add a little bit of tone infliction into it or focus on one part or another, and it gives that same call a completely different meaning. So,
do you have your bugle tube with you?
Absolutely. So,
I said I'm going to lower my headphones so you don't blow my ears out.
Okay.
Rip us off a example of a location bugle.
Okay, so location bugle, just nice and relaxed.
Nice.
You know, it's just kind of nice and relaxed. There's no big finish on it. Now, in comparison to that, a challenge bugle. You know, it gets to that top note really quick. It's not as long. And that's a thing that it's not necessarily a sound that they need to learn, but it's more along the lines that as a bull gets more agitated, you'll notice that his bugle reaches that higher note faster and actually becomes shorter and shorter.
Got less patience.
So exactly. You know, he's wanting to scream that point across, you know, right away. That's all right. So that's definitely one that I would say people really need to focus on. Another one is Hold on, I'm getting choked up and emotional here. Another one that I think is a sound that gets overlooked a lot is kind of a excited or lost mew that kind of focuses on that high note. You know, versus a nice relaxed mew. So that excited or lost mew, it's basically asking for a response from elk around. And I think it's a tool that so many people focus so much on the bugling that they kind of miss out on the cow sound aspect of it. And I'm a firm believer that using your cow sounds to set up your bugles is a highly effective combination.
Yeah, I agree with you. Or just a quick interjection. It's funny that you say that because the industry has gone. It used to be, I remember, it wasn't that long ago. I would say even 10 years ago. Everybody was about cow sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You better know how to cow call, and bugling was just meant for locating.
Right.
Now all these guys came out and you're like, oh, you got to challenge bugles. You got, you know, and all this, like, you know, and, you know, all joking aside, they work.
They do.
You know, there's, you know, the elk call and cow bugle, the challenge, the lip ball, all this stuff. I mean, it'd be nice if we all had the time to learn everything and not just learn how to do them, but learn when to use them.
Right.
But this is why I asked you, what's the four most important sounds like that you think? It's just because most guys only have time to master, you know, three or four sounds, and they only have, you know, the time to know when to interject those, and that's gonna give them enough tools to possibly get it done.
But you know what's funny about that? Like I said, if you take the basic cow mew or the basic bugle and you put emphasis on one part or another, it just gives it a different meaning. So really, learning that basic mew or learning that basic bugle is really the foundation to learning. And the way I kind of just, you know, figured all this out was I took quite a bit of psychology when I was in college. And so I understand, you know, human physical body language. And so I started just really watching elk and listening to the sounds that they were throwing out. And when you can hear them and see them and you see the body gestures and posture, it's like, oh man, I think I understand what that sound means. And then after time of watching it over and over again and seeing the repeat, then it's like, oh, okay, hey, I understand, you know, kind of how this means. Now, ultimately, yeah, I would recommend everybody learn all the vocalizations that you can, because it's just going to help you recognize situations out there.
Right.
So I think another important one that they need to understand, and I'm guilty of this. So, okay, hypothetical scenario, you're hiking through the woods trying to locate elk, and then all of a sudden from about 60, 75 yards away, you know, you just hear this bull throw out this growl. Well, we're all guilty of it. The first time we hear that, we freeze exactly where we're at. We start scrambling to figure out how we're going to set up and this and that. And then by the time we get all that figured out and we throw our first sound out, that bull responds with a bugle, but now he's 200 yards away. Well, basically what that growl is that bull heard you walking, and it's a defense mechanism of them. They heard you walking. So what he's doing with that growl is he's asking you, what are you? Now, elk recognize that growl, so they'll immediately respond with a soft cow call or something. And typically that's how I immediately respond to it. One soft cow call. It lets that elk know that you are another elk. Because basically he's going to throw that growl and he's going to give you about 15, 20 seconds to do an elk sound back, or immediately in his mind, you're a predator, I'm out of here.
Right. Yeah. That's the who goes there growl.
Exactly. Exactly. Who goes there? What are you and what's your intentions? So.
Yeah. I've fallen victim to that myself. And
I think we all have.
I learned that the hard way. So, all right. So that's number three. What's number four?
You know, number four, it's a sound that I think is important, and I'm going to kind of debunk a myth that has been out there for a long time. And that's that buzz mule. For years, we've been told that that is the estrus buzz. That is when a cow is in estrus and she is absolutely ready to breed. My response to that is hogwash, because I've heard cows do that in July. I've heard them do it in January. I've heard them do it in June. And we know darn well that cows are not in estrus all year round. To me, I think it's more of a demanding, urgent type sound. That, because if you understand herd dynamics and what's really going on with the rut, is when that cow's in estrus, those pheromones are floating in the air. It creates a lot of herd excitement. You have all these bulls bugling. You have all these cows and calves. She has to do some sort of sound that separates her from everybody else. And that's what this kind of demanding mew is saying. It's basically saying, pay attention to me now. And in fact, Chris Rowe, Rowe Hunting Resources, has a video on his YouTube channel that's, I think it's Cow Barks, Bugles, and More, that shows a cow doing this during the middle of summer. And if you watch her, you can tell that she's separated from the herd, and she has these excited, lost mews, and nobody is responding to her. And all of a sudden, she breaks into this demanding buzz mew that's basically demanding somebody to respond to her. And so it's a great tool that added into your calling setups can be highly effective. And because we focus heavily on the breeding sequence. That's what we do in our setups, is we paint that picture that we are a bull with a hot cow. And in all of our setups, that's that picture. That's that scenario. Because each time you set up your calling, you're telling a story. You're trying to tell a story to paint a picture in this bull's head of what's going on. And that's why, to us, this demanding that buzz mew is so effective. But just like any other sound, there is a timing aspect. You don't want to jump right into it and just start rocking on your full sounds right off the get-go as soon as you're set up. It's basically like you're building a fire. You know, you're going to start with small pieces of kindling, and then as that fire grows, you start adding bigger chunks of logs. Same thing with your calling scenario and your setups. You don't want to jump right into throwing all your cards on the table. You have nowhere to go from that. So start small, build that excitement and that story up.
Smart. So what I find that we have all these guys out here, guys, girls, whatever, listening on how to bugle, how to do sounds, how to make whatever, how to make elk sounds in general.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I think is not well covered is how to recognize when to use those sounds.
Yes.
So I got a kind of a vague generalized question, but I want you to kind of help us paint the picture here.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to paint a little bit of a picture for you. Okay.
Sure.
We're in the rut. Okay. And you've already located a bull, and you've come to the conclusion, or at least you think he's with cattle.
Okay.
Okay. What? Take us from there. I had some other details, but let's take us from there.
So really, when you're set up and you're working a bull, really the one thing that you need to do is you need to kind of take that bull's temperature. You need to know what you're dealing with. And based on certain responses to what you're doing will a lot of times let you know what kind of bull you're dealing with and what type of situation. And in prime example, so within the breeding sequence, when I'm doing this, I will do something that's called huffs, grunts, and whines, which is, you know, just a bull just huffing. And here's an example of huffs, grunts, and whines. So as soon as you're doing, you know, this breeding sequence and you introduce a bull vocalization like that. So, I mean, bulls understand what's going on. I mean, they recognize the sounds within this breeding sequence. So when they hear that, depending on the response that you get back. So say, for example, I throw that out and I just get this. You know, this little timid whine. That's generally telling me that I'm working with a smaller bull or a younger bull in age class. That's not something that I want to immediately jump in and start challenging that bull and start trying to force my will on that bull. Because if I try to force or intimidate him with a challenge, he knows he's really not in that mindset. So with that, I'm going to kind of go more towards, you know, still stay within that breeding sequence, but I'm going to be really soft on whatever bull vocalizations I'm going to do. I'm not going to do this big, bad, boisterous bugle. You know, it's going to be my cow sounds with these huffs, you know, maybe some grunts, a little bit of raking, where I'm going to play more on his curiosity. You know, what's going on here? And, you know, I want to come in and see what's going on. Now, that same scenario where I throw those huffs, grunts, and whines, and now the type of response I get back, you know, notice there's a little more aggression into that response. There's a little more. So I'm dealing with more of a more mature bull. So now I know with that I can basically, he's already shown me a little bit of aggression. I can return aggression with him.
Right.
And so that's really the key in these scenarios is paying attention to the responses that you're getting and gather that information based on responses. Now, is it 100% accurate? I mean, no. I've seen monstrous bulls that sound like Pee Wee Herman. I mean, and vice versa. But in these scenarios, if you're always matching that intensity level that you're getting or just going slightly above, you'll never intimidate that bull. But you're still controlling, you're still on offense, you're still controlling the scenario. And what you'll find is the number of bulls that you call in by doing this will actually rise dramatically because now you're matching. I think the biggest piece of advice I ever got early on was how can you write a book for a story that hasn't even happened yet? And I was like, well, what do you mean? Well, every encounter with a bull is different. Their mindsets are different. And that mindset of that bull can change throughout that interaction that you have with him.
Yeah. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. When, where, and what? Cow sounds. Like, we talked about cow sounds.
Yep. So, like I said, I use my cow sounds to set up my bugles. So, so obviously, locating. Whenever I'm locating, I always, first thing I do is throw off a couple of those excited lost mews that I demonstrated earlier. Because it does a couple of things. One, it gets that diaphragm reed set in the roof of your mouth. It gets saliva on it. It gets it tuned. But also, if there's a bull within 100 yards, I'm not going from silent to, because, I mean, a location bugle, you want volume. You want high pitch. You want it to cover out there. So I'm not going from quiet to max volume right off the get-go. There has been times that I've thrown those couple of excited lost mews out, and we've had a bull respond within 100 yards. And now the scramble is on to find the right setup location and control that and get set up before that bull comes trotting in. So first and foremost, cow sounds before location bugle. Then setting up, I always start with a few cow sounds.
Okay.
Just because, like I said, it's one of
sequence.
What's that?
Because you're going to be doing a breeding sequence.
Right. So I always do, you know, the cow vocalizations first and then work in the bull vocalizations, but I never abandon the cow sounds until the bull I'm working either A, gives me a challenge bugle, or B, gives me that guttural lip ball display bugle.
Okay.
Because up to that point, I'm just focusing on telling my story, because, you know, I'm that bull that has my cow. This is where my focus is. I could care less if there's another bull that's 250 yards out that's bugling. He's not really a threat to me. Mm-hmm. But until he breaks that window, and now all of a sudden starts trying to engage my cow or take my cow away from me or shows some sign of dominance, I'm basically going to ignore him and just paint my picture until I hear that challenge or that display. And then at that point, I generally drop the cow sounds because that bull's aggression level is now elevated enough that now I can focus on the bugles and go aggression on aggression and get him to the point where nostrils are flared, eyes are bulging. I mean, he's peeing like a sprinkler. He doesn't care if there's a tree in the way. He's not going around it. He's going through it to get to me because I've basically insulted his mother.
Right, right. Cool. So what are some of the things that you do to stack the odds in your favor? Like, walk me through a perfect situation. Like,
so the number one thing that we do to stack the odds in our favor is night bugling.
Okay.
So, you know, early on, you know, we used to pack in 7-8 miles.
Okay.
And we were in the backcountry. And here probably the last, 8 to 10 years or so, we've gone more of a base camp with a truck because we have that ability that we can jump in the truck and we can go 35, 40 miles any direction.
Yeah.
Yep. And so that night bugling is the one thing that leads to our success because we do that night bugling and we know for a fact we're going in the next day and there's elk there. We don't have to cover that ground and locate. So the fact that we're already going in, knowing that there are elk there, it just increases the number of encounters that we have throughout the season. And we'll do night bugling one of two ways. We'll either one, you know, get back to camp because we leave camp in the dark. We come back in the dark. We spend all day on the mountainside. So we may get back to camp, eat some dinner, then we'll jump in the truck and go. That gives those elk time to get into their feeding grounds, to get comfortable, to get into their nighttime routines. And we'll go out, bugle until we strike a response. And then that's it. We don't stay there and interact. We get that one response and it's like, okay, this is where we're going tomorrow.
Mark it on the GPS and that's where.
Yep. Or we'll get back to camp, have dinner, jump into bed, and then we'll get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then start driving roads and locating. The one thing about the morning that's nice is when we do get a response, man, we're throwing our packs on and we're working our way slowly that direction. So as soon as it does start cracking enough light, we're right there. So the morning time, we'll normally do that on full moon or bright moon nights, because it's a little easier to walk through the dark. Elk can see in the dark a heck of a lot better than we can. I've got enough scars on my shins from banging into deadfalls and this and that, that I try to avoid it now.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned it. 'Cause like that's one of the things that I've been doing for at least 10 years now. Mm-hmm. That I go out like 3 o'clock in the morning and I drive the roads. And one thing, I'm going to put this out there, because when you go with the truck or your quad or whatever, you shut your quad down, you got to wait 5 minutes.
Yes.
Before you blast the bugle. Because if you just blast the bugle right after you shut off the truck, you're probably not going to get as many responses. And if you do, you might be associating yourself, you know, that bugle with humans, and it doesn't work that well.
Absolutely. Well, and on the flip side too, the reason I say once you get a response, leave it alone. Yeah. So I remember a few years back, we had drawn a tag down on the Idaho-Nevada border, and we went out on this point bugling. And I mean, this canyon down below us, I mean, there was probably 12, 15 bulls down in there. And you know, we're guilty. We love hearing bulls bugle. We love to hear it echo. So we kind of sat down on the sagebrush there and kept bugling back. Yeah. Well, next thing I know, we hear him trotting up where he's coming, and he's screaming. And next thing we know, he's 40 yards from us. And it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, because the last thing we want to do is have him catch a nose full of our scent, and you know, then he takes everybody out of this canyon with him. So we learned early on, you get that response, man, get out of there. Yeah. Don't continue talking to him.
Yeah. I was in Colorado with my cousin Anthony and a good friend of mine, Colin Zion. And none of these guys, they don't call.
Uh-huh.
They didn't in Colorado. They at the time, now actually Colin got into it, and he's calling a lot, but he killed a bunch of elk just by moving through the woods quietly and, you know, stalking them and, you know, mm-hmm. still hunting them basically. And it like by like day 4 or 5, I was like, I'm going to do this Arizona style. Okay. I'm not having success this way. I'm not sneaky enough, I guess. And I'm not really seeing the elk that I wanted. So I went out in the morning. And I started bugling. Actually, I bugled. The first bugle I did was from camp, and I got a response up the ridge not too far from camp. So I didn't even have to get in the truck. But, and it was probably like 3:30-ish or whatever. We crossed the creek. I went after this bull, and I kept pressing in because he was a ways off.
Right.
I cut the distance to like, you know, 150, 200 yards and just kind of hang out, because I've done that before, just sit there in the dark and just let him do his thing. And anyway, well, I ended up calling him in, and it was right at legal shooting light. I could have killed him, and I should have, honestly. I wish I did. But my cameraman, we couldn't see him in the camera. I let him go, and I'm thinking to myself, he was 15 yards, and I was like, and, you know, I really didn't have much opportunity.
Right.
Except for that, so I was really itching to pull the trigger there. And, anyway, so I'm drawing back on him. I'm like, can you see him? He's like, no, I can't see him. So I let him walk by, and I'm like, all right, I'll be able to call him back, you know, in 10 minutes. You know, we're close enough. I could never get him to come back. He went and dropped down and went and bed down somewhere by the creek bottom in the willows or something, thick stuff that I couldn't, like, I didn't want to go in after him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, man, like, really? Oh, like, Seven to 8 minutes more, and I probably would have been able to, like, you know, kill him on camera. And I was like,
that whole camera aspect. I've been there, whether it was, you know, the DVD series for Rocky Mountain or the Explorer's Big Game Journal. But yeah, drawn back, you're anchored, you're burying that pin, and all of a sudden you hear that cameraman, "Don't shoot, I'm not on him." Yeah. And yeah, you've been getting your tail kicked in. You know, it's just, you hear that, and you're like, might have a tag for you, cameraman, here shortly if you ever tell me that again. So I feel your pain. I've been there.
Oh, man. I got one last question for you.
Okay.
then I'm going to ask you to tell me, to share a story with me so you can think about that a little bit. It doesn't have to be three things, but I'm going to say three. What are three things that you could attribute your success to in the field?
Number one, knowledge, understanding, you know, the game that I'm pursuing, their habits, their biology, you know, biological makeup, you know, the knowledge of everything about them, I think is one of the things that, is number one on the list. Two would be the willingness to go anywhere. Meaning if I'm up on a tall ridge and I hear a bugle all the way down on the bottom, and I'm thankful that my hunting partners share this too. We've always had that mentality. You know what? Get down. Let's get them on the ground first. We'll figure out how to get them out later.
Right, right.
So, but so many people will, you know, hear that and they're like, I'm not going down there. So
I never could understand that myself.
You know, I don't get it. So, and then I think the third thing is having fun and appreciating the journey. And I think that's one thing that so many people focus on. You know, their definition of success is that punch tag.
Right.
That they forget to have fun and enjoy everything that's going on out there. And I think that's one thing that still to this day, I mean, this is going to be my 31st year of chasing elk. And I mean, I'm still like a little kid in Christmas that night before and the first morning. I mean, I'm JoJo, the Indian circus boy that's bouncing around trees in the camp. And I've done odd things like come running out of the tent with just boots and underwear and a flappy flannel hat on, you know, rallying up my hunting partners. And they're just like, I'm stuck in the woods with this dude. Yeah. But I think that's just, you gotta have fun with it and enjoy it. So I would say those are really the kind of the three keys that really lead to the success, but knowledge is definitely the most important.
Yeah. No, that's good, man. I like the last one. I'm actually, I haven't been having fun with it in the last year or two. And it's definitely affected my hunting. I felt like I've been putting way too much pressure on myself to produce, and
it's tough and can happen. But I mean, really think about it that, you know, maybe the hunt's not going as planned and, you know, just this and this, and your anger level is rising, but somebody does one slapstick, have fun type thing. And it just lightens up the mood. And then 15, 20 minutes after that, all of a sudden there's an elk on the ground. And you're like, how did we go from this mad, nothing is really going the way we want it, to the highs of highs, and this has been the greatest hunt ever?
Yeah.
That emotional roller coaster is, and in fact, prime example. So I talked about where stay on the mountain all day. Yep. I carry a parachute hammock in my pack. Just because I learned a while ago that no matter the spot that I choose to lay on the ground, there's going to be pine cones, an ant farm, something is going to interfere. So I got a hammock a few years ago and I bought some for my hunting partners. Well, last year, Bryce and Brandon, they're a father and son duo that's hunted with me for years. Bryce and I had taken our hammocks out to take a nap or something. Well, they didn't make it back in our pack. We're on the mountainside to take a break and I'm pulling everything out of my pack going, where the heck? And I'm like, oh, I know exactly where it's sitting back in camp. Bryce, same thing. Brandon pulls his hammock out with just this grin on his face. Like, sucks to be you guys. He strings his hammock up. Bryce and I are laying on the ground doing the ant dance, getting the ants off. And all of a sudden we hear Brandon just, you can tell he's out. He's got that deep rhythmic breathing. And so Bryce and I look at each other, didn't even say a word, stood up and stalked in to each side of the hammock. And then one, two, three, grabbed that hammock and started rocking that like a rodeo. Now, the thing you need to understand is Brandon is 6'4", 265. And here we are rocking this hammock, and all of a sudden his head pops out like a prairie dog popping his head out of a hole on a Wyoming prairie, all wide-eyed, trying to figure out what's going on. And we just laughed about it. And like I said, about 15 minutes later, everything calmed down and did a few just light cow calls. And we had a smoke and a pancake, which is what we call a spike and a cow. Uh-huh. And we had a smoke and a pancake just come walking in within 15, 16 yards of us sitting in camp, sitting on the hillside right there.
That's crazy.
So, well, it's got to have fun.
Yeah, that's important. It really is. So, tell me a story that maybe had a teaching moment for you that changed the way you elk hunt, something that opened your eyes.
So this happened last year. And, you know, we've always heard that, you know, bulls are predictable for the most part, meaning when you're calling to them, they're going to come to a point where they should be able to see you. Then if they can't see you, they're going to start circling downwind to smell you. Well, last year, we have this place that's called the doorway that we kind of go through. It's cattle have kind of formed this hallway through this buck brush. Okay. We go through there, and then you drop up on this ridge, and then you kind of angle down the ridge down into this flat, marshy, grassy bottom. And we would normally get on top of that ridge and then bugle a few times as we're heading down that trail to contact and locate. And so we had done this a couple of times last year and gotten some bulls. And we came in this one morning and I bugled from the top of the ridge like we always do and no response. Worked about halfway down, and I have certain parts that I'll bugle from, and worked about halfway down and bugle again, no response. And got down to the bottom, crossed the creek and bugle, and now all of a sudden, bang, bang, bang. Three bulls that were right there where they normally are then all of a sudden responded. And one of them I have a little bit of history with that I called him in 2 years ago. So I immediately start interacting with him. I get my shooter set up. We're doing everything. And it's almost like that three-point system. You know, I'm here. My shooter's in the middle and the bull's on the other side. Well, all of a sudden he started circling upwind and I'm just pivoting with him to keep the shooter in the middle. And I'm like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. He is not doing anything that a mature bull normally will do. And I'm just pivoting around. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me when we had almost swapped positions that he had gone upwind of us to go over and scent check the trail that we walked in on. Because when we walk with our boots, we leave a little bit of scent. So he went right over to that spot to scent check the trail before he actually committed to come in. And I had never had a bull do that before. And so I'm like, okay.
That's what a whitetail will do.
Oh, it threw me off. But, you know, we ended up getting back on him. You know, he went silent, circled back around and grabbed his cows. And I know where they roll around the end of the ridge to go into their bedding area. So we, you know, regathered and went and kind of cut him off a little bit and engaged and called him in. Unfortunately, my shooter had decided that he didn't like where he was set up, and so he changed locations without me even knowing that he had moved. And so here I am focusing to bring that bull where I think my shooter is, and my shooter is actually about 25, 30 yards to the north of where I thought he was. So I got a great show watching him, and he's a stud bull. He still ranks very, very high, but he is one that really always teaches me something new every year. I'm hoping I get him before old age does.
Is the one you guys call Pitchfork or something like that?
No. Pitchfork. So Pitchfork runs in that same area. Okay. So, well, actually that's Pitchfork right there.
Oh, okay.
Trident is the one that you're thinking of that yeah, Trident came and laid down in front of my trail camera for about 4 hours one day and gave me just insane pictures of him. So, but yeah, in that area, we have Trident, we have Rake, which is again, another funky horn bull. And then we have the Big Six, and the Big Six is this one that I'm talking about that, you know, he's probably pushing 350 to 360 now. But just, but there's a reason he got that big.
A really big Idaho bull.
Oh, on public land over the counter? Yeah. Yeah.
Your story, I mean, that honestly, that doesn't surprise me at all about the elk doing that. But what it did is it brought up a question to me that I don't think people, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not going to speak for everybody, would think to ask.
Uh-huh.
But what I heard in your whole story is that you just told me that elk will occupy the same areas year after year.
Yes. Yep.
And I don't know if anybody picked up on that or wanted to ask that question, but I thought it might be a nice tidbit.
It is. And the doorway is an area that we hit opening weekend every year. Because every year there's multiple bulls hanging in that doorway area. And it's all part of that kind of establishing pecking order, gathering their cows, getting ready. And what's crazy, though, is if you go into the doorway from the middle of the month on, nothing. Very few. You'll have a couple of stragglers that will stay there. But the most part of the groups have gathered up their cows, and all these big mature herd bulls have broken up into their own established breeding areas in their own bedrooms. So it definitely is one of those areas that we focus on the first part of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that with deer a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They have like an area that they occupy a certain, you know, and so I tell people all the time, I'm like, if you go, let's say 2 years in a row, and you notice that there's bulls and whatever, there's elk in a specific spot. Not only that, you know, that's a good spot for you to go to year after year, analyze that spot. What does that spot have? Is it the vegetation? Is it the cover? Is it the juxtaposition of cover to vegetation, or, you know, feeding to, you know, escape routes, and try to analyze it and look for those same things.
Mm-hmm.
On the map somewhere else, and you're going to be able to find elk in other places.
Yeah. And I'll even give this tidbit. The reason this place is so good early in the year is it is a cool, damp draw.
Nice.
It's a marshy creek running through it, dark timber that is, I mean, as soon as you walk in there, it's 10 to 15 degrees cooler. Well, the first part of our archery seasons are typically hotter anyway, so you want to go find those cool, dark draws for the first part of the season. The reason they leave those areas is because as the rut progresses and the season progresses, those temperatures start to come down, so they can get away from those areas and then break up into their more, because those cool, dark draws are not everywhere on the mountainside. And the last thing that, you know, bulls want to do, especially when cows really start coming into estrus and we start getting into the peak of the rut, they really don't want those other big mature herd bulls around. They're that kid on the playground that grabs his arms around all the toys and are just like, mine, you know, and he's not sharing with anybody else.
I'm taking my stuff for going home.
Yes.
Nice. Well, awesome, man. I think we gave the listeners a lot to think about and some really useful knowledge. I want to thank you for coming on, and yeah, maybe we can make this a little bit more of a regular thing. I'd love to have you on. Elk always seems to be a very interesting and, or I shouldn't say interesting, but a very provocative topic, so to speak, for my listeners. They get a lot of traction. So I'd like to put out as much elk content as possible.
Well, absolutely. It is amazing how, kind of that thirst of elk knowledge has just exploded over the last few years, and the popularity of it has just grown. So yeah, I would love to come back on. I mean, any excuse to sit down and talk to elk or talk about elk, you don't have to twist my arm very hard to do that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and real quick, again, give us a rundown of where people could find you and check out the Elk Calling Academy.
You bet. So we made it pretty easy. It's just Elk Calling Academy across the board. So Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, everything on all that is all Elk Calling Academy. Right now, if you go to elkcallingacademy.com, it will point you towards the Patreon page. And we have, you know, for members only, those instructional and tutorial videos where we actually dive into a lot of these sounds. And we have a lot of giveaways from partners coming up. I think we're 3 patrons away from giving a Ready to Grow bundle from Ready Nutrients. I mean, that's $160 value. When we get to 100 members, we got Initial Ascent Pack coming out. We've got Scree gear. We've got, you know, a brand new hunting bow. We've got backcountry e-bikes. And so, you know, got a lot of good giveaways coming up. So yeah, elkcallingacademy.com right now will take you to the Patreon page. And then as soon as the website's built, that will be redirected to go to the actual website that will have the full-blown e-course on there as well.
Sweet. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. Thank you.
How's it going?
Hey, guys, just a couple of quick closing thoughts. If you want to stay connected with the podcast, check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's johnstallone.me. And it's a nice place to catch all my articles, game recipes, workouts, all kinds of good stuff that goes hand in hand with the podcast. Another thing I want to talk to you about is if you're looking for a safe place to be part of a community on social media, I want you to go and check out Broadhead Nation on Facebook. If you're not already a member, it's a nice place where everybody should feel comfortable to ask questions, to be part of a community. They do a really good job. That's Broadhead Nation on Facebook. Check it out.